Welcome to the Chile Today podcast. I'm Bethany Francis.
And I'm Lennart Kluge.
We're two immigrants living in Chile, talking about Chilean news, culture events, travel business, and more.
If you want to support our podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thechiletodaypodcast.
Long time no see.
Hi, Bethany. We have to talk fast because we're on a timer now.
Oh my gosh. We're professionals now. So we're being timed.
How have you been? How's your summer been? Tell me all about it. Now, 3, 2, 1, go.
I went to Brazil.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
Yeah. It was interesting.
Could be worse.
I didn't realize it rained so much in Brazil.
Yeah.
I was like thinking I'm going to go on a tropical vacation, which, I mean, it was amazing. Like, not like I'm really. Like, lucky I got to go to Brazil. It was really amazing. But I was like, tropical vacation, sunshine, and rainbows.
Tropical rains.
And I was like, well, there were rainbows because was rain.
No, I actually got caught in a rainstorm. Rainstorm?
Yeah,
like,
rainstorm.
More like, yeah, in Sao Paulo once. Dude, these things start like nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it just starts.
Yeah.
And if you're caught unaware and you're not under a roof or anything, you get soaked within like 3 seconds.
Soaked.
It is crazy.
And it was beautiful and I had an amazing time. I went with my family. So it was great. That was basically my summer. I went for a week. That was my vacation. And tomorrow I'm going to Disney World.
Well, look at you traveling all around the world.
I know. And how about you? How was your summer?
I worked.
Right. You didn't go, you didn't go on a trip this summer. You went on a trip sort of before that.
Yeah, I went. I think I went on a trip twice last year. So yeah. I'm gonna go again on vacation later this year. But I usually never leave town, and I don't take vacation during the summer here in Chile because everybody else takes vacation, and then the streets have clogged up, and then prices are expensive, and
Going out of the city, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a good tip for people who are listening. Don't travel in February, late January, early March.
Just enjoy Santiago.
Yeah, with
the serenity that
it.
Is Santiago.
The only reason I went to Brazil the week I went was because my Chilean family planned that trip. So it was like, okay, well, let's go. And then I'm going to Disney World next week because it's one of the cheapest weeks to go to Disney World in
really?
The year. Yes, in April.
Yeah.
Mid-April,
well,
specifically.
Bethany, pray tell, how do you know this?
Oh, because I'm a Disney travel agent.
Oh, wow. Tell me more. But briefly, because we're running out of time.
Okay, so I plan Disney vacations. I'm completely free because I work on commission. I know everything about Disney World, Disneyland, Disneyland Tokyo, all of that stuff. If you're planning a trip, contact the podcast. I'll help you out. It's great.
Rightio.
Big discounts. Big,
nice.
Weighty discounts.
All right. Shall we get into it? I'm tired, dude. Did I tell you I went to the...
You worked? Yes.
FIDAI. I was working at the FIDAI last week.
What is that?
I saw
a lot of white people that looked really boring in your pictures.
It's Europeans, so there, you know, and a lot of military personnel. It's the aerospace and defense fair. It's, I guess, for South American standards, pretty big. And it's interesting because actually I'm going to go back there on the weekend because A, I have to, but also to watch like some of the air shows, you know, I think they call it the Halcones Azules, is it? Yeah. They're actually one of the most renowned,
What did you say, Azules?
Halcones Azules.
Oh, because the U.S. has the Blue Angels.
Ah, okay. That might be... Something. Yeah, they're based in Baltimore, was it?
I don't know where the Blue Angels are based, but the reason I know this is because I grew up watching air shows all the time because there's a very big military base in the city I grew up in.
Right.
So air shows are like nothing to me. I know that sounds like a weird pump, weird brag.
Yeah, weird flex.
I mean, honestly, it's annoying because like there's constant like...
Oh, dude.
Zoom, zoom, zoom.
The last week every day in our stand, and then every 2 hours you had like, I mean, the air shows with the prop machines, like the little, you know, with the one engine, that's fine. But then you get like the, I don't know, F-16 or jet fighters, and then you were having a conversation and you just heard like, and it was like, you just stopped for like 5 seconds, like looking at each other awkwardly.
At least they're not doing sonic booms because they can do that and it's horrible. But
they're not allowed to do that anymore, are they?
No. The only time I've heard sonic booms is when I wasn't in the U.S.
Wow, yeah.
So, and the first time, again, I grew up around planes. The first time I heard one, I was like, what the was that?
Help.
Yeah, because they're not allowed to do them in the U.S.
Right.
Anyway, I digress. Huh? So we got news for you. So our first, this is season four, everyone. We're starting season four. Trying to be a little bit more scripted. We'll see how that goes with two ADHD hosts.
What's the plot? What's the story arc? Who's the villain?
Yeah, I'm definitely the villain of the two of us.
Ah, you're going to be the villain this season?
I'll be the villain. Okay. Am I the villain? I'm not the villain. So, season four, coming up.
Cool.
For you. We have upcoming events. Do we have any upcoming events right now? No, we don't have any upcoming events. But follow us on Patreon. Follow us on Patreon. Get free entrances, free booze, free beer for our events. We'll have events coming up. And also we have tip sheets for you. We have a backlog of tip sheets too. So if you're visiting Chile, live in Chile, lots of tips that you like, where to travel, what to buy, where to go, best vineyards, things like that. All on our Patreon, and you can try it for free. So yeah, let's go.
Let's go. All right, so this week we are not going to do a deep dive. We are going to do a news update. Mm-hmm. And there was actually one news item in particular that has dominated the news cycle for the last week.
Trying to find news this week. Like, that wasn't this.
Which was macabre, which was weird, which was interesting.
That's adorable. Macabre.
Macabre. Oh, well, it was macabre. Isn't that a monkey? The macabre monkey? I don't know.
It's Macau.
Okay, fine. The macabre monkey goes around murdering people.
I thought the macaw
people.
Was a bird.
Damn, that's a macaw. You have 6 minutes. You really have 6 minutes.
Yeah, we're spending six minutes.
Yeah, talking about animals.
So what, so what happened, like, last week, I think even 2 weeks ago now, like, in New York, they found, like, a bag with human remains.
A bag?
Like, oh, no, suitcase, was it? Was it a suitcase? A bag? Yeah. And so at first, they were just like, they said, okay, we found human remains and they were like dismembered and organized crime. And that was probably one of the drug cartels trying to send a message. And because they were just like, okay, organized crime, why not? You know, it keeps on happening these days. And then they checked the CCTV footage and they actually saw that, like, whoever left that suitcase there was like this elderly woman who was apparently, supposedly, a nun. There's going to be another
twist. She was dressed as a nun, right?
She was dressed as a
nun.
But
in a body bag.
First it was like, oh, that was a nun that left it. So they tracked her down, and she was like around 80 years old. And then they checked. Basically, they found out that the suitcase, the person in the suitcase, or the deceased person in the suitcase, was another supposed nun at around like 58, 60 years. Mm-hmm. It turned out that she actually died apparently of natural causes. I'm not sure if the forensics is in already, but for now the story is that that woman, she died of cancer. And the reason that the elderly woman basically just left her there in a suitcase is that these two women, they weren't nuns as such, because they interviewed some people from the Catholic Church and they were like, the archbishop, he was just like, they're not part of a little organization. They're
not nuns.
They're not nuns. They call them laicos. So basically, people that want to live like nuns, but they're not affiliated to any church.
Not officially nuns.
So they had this like compact, because they tried to...
compound, you mean?
No, more like this covenant...
They're a cult.
Right. No, that like they made this pact, these two women. They were like, you know what, we don't want to have to do anything with the outside world.
You have to impact carme in a
oh wow. Wow, that's low in for you. So they had like this pact to be like they didn't want to have anything to do with the outside world. And when the story goes that when one of the women actually fell sick, she didn't even get treated for, I think it was cancer. And then she was like, well, take care of me until my last breath and yada, yada, yada. And then she passed away. And then the other woman just stashed her in one of the bodegas that she had in her house. And she stayed there for 1 year in the house. And then after 1 year, she decided, I need to get rid of that body.
Yeah, because it stinks.
Yeah. And I think it was a few of the trash man. They were just like, we're going to throw this. Like, this smells funny. And then they were like, what is, oh my God, what is this? You know?
Oh my God, I didn't hear that part of it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's how I heard it.
This is amazing.
This is
the type of stuff that happens in the U.S. Aw, Chile's growing. First world.
Oh, wow. See, first the rising gun violence, now this kind of shit.
Yeah, cults.
See, I think we need more stars on the flag now. We've earned it.
We have one big one.
See? So, yeah, that is actually... That's not that much more to that story, but this is what it is so far. But it's just crazy, like the twists and turns. First, it was like, it was organized crime. It was like, no, it was a nun. It was like, oh, no, it wasn't a nun. It was just an old lady who doesn't like the outside world. Like, what is going on? Oh,
and she's. Why'd you put her in a suitcase?
And now she's not getting charged with. For now, with manslaughter or murder,
desecration is what they call it, of a corpse or something.
No, it's like this.
Mutilation.
This. Felony of not registering a death, like you can't, like, for obvious reasons, you cannot have a dead body in your house, period. It needs to be buried.
It's a little unsanitary.
It's a bit unsanitary, and also, like, authorities need to know, is that person dead or not, you know?
Yeah, so you can't, because, like, use
insurance
them for
fraud
internet.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
So she's probably gonna get charged with that, but
she's 80.
Yeah, not like she cares.
Jesus,
it's a wacky story. So
I wanna interview their neighbors. Did you smell it?
Yeah. And they're probably going to be like, oh, she was always such a nice and timid lady. We would have never suspected him and him and her. The typical one, yeah?
Yeah. The memes are on fire, though.
Oh, boy, yes.
The memes are on fire. I love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So that was mine. What you got?
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the CAF strategies that began implementation in 2023 to 2026. It's a little dry, but it is important. So I'm going to try to keep it as upbeat as possible. So this past Monday, the president, Gabriel Boric, is leading the commemoration of the first anniversary of the Office of the Development Bank of Latin America and the Caribbean, which is CAF, or the Andean Development Corporation. There's a lot of reasons that abbreviation has changed. So it's worth remembering that last year in March 2023, Boric participated in a ceremony marking Chile's reintegration into the CAF. And it's now modernly known as Development Bank of Latin America, which is basically a multilateral financial institution, and now of today consists of 21 countries and 13 private banks.
And I mean, that new name is much snazzier.
CAF? Oh, you mean the Development Bank of Latin America?
So much snazzier.
Snazzy. I think it just really wants to emphasize that it's not just, it also includes private banks. That's why I think they want to do it.
Yeah, and it's also not only Andino, you know?
Yeah, because it's also the Caribbean.
Correcto mundo.
So basically it aims to, as they say, contribute to sustainable development of the member countries in these areas. So Chile has four strategic axes specifically, which is to strengthen regions for equitable development, because the regions, if you don't know, are obviously not as developed as, for example, Santiago. Green transitions for...
By the regions, we mean the provinces.
The provinces,
of Chile.
Right.
In case.
So, because we live right now in Región Metropolitana, right? And then there's...
The countryside.
Exactly. So the next axis is the sustainable energy transition, which a lot, if you live here, you know that that's a really big thing.
Yep.
And the digitization and connectivity for the 21st century.
Isn't it digitalization?
I think for some reason mine auto-corrected to digitization, but digitalization is actually, I think, correct.
I mean, I guess digitization would be the economy gets more fingers.
Maybe it does.
Maybe, who knows?
The nuns getting fingers. Anyway, we've talked about that, actually. There's been a lot of things that the president has been doing to try to make, again, the regions more connected, laying new lines and things like that. So this first axis, the strengthening of the region, is to make sure the public sector capacities are growing, focusing on specifically the Magallanes, Los Lagos, and Tarapacá regions to make sure that they have access to public infrastructure for the people, right? It also involves technical assistance to develop management capacities and introduce a phase of financing programs to strengthen these capacities in these kind of local governments. Again, I told you this will kind of dry, but I'm doing my best. So as far as the green transition, it involves technical support of the Ministry of Environment and trying to implement biodiversity in protected areas. So again, this is not just public stuff. This is also private sectors, private companies also contributing to this. It's sort of the idea that...
It's sort of the Chilean model, really.
It's very
public-private.
Yeah, public-private combination. It's very Chilean. Mm. So again, that's another reason why I think Boric really wanted to get involved in this. So also the Green Transition Axis, is also really being pushed for sustainable transportation, which is another thing that we've definitely been seeing. Trains, things like that.
Double-decker buses, electric double-decker buses.
Yeah. Also, this is really important, implementation of programs to reduce climate vulnerability, for example, things like flood risks. So we have fires in the summer, we have really bad floods in the winter. So
because it rains too much.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so trying to do like preventative measures for those kinds of things. I think that this is really cool. Yeah. And lastly, the Production Development Corporation to cover technical advisory team costs for green hydrogen. So
that actually goes hand in glove with like the improvement of the infrastructure in the Magallanes region that you said.
Yeah.
Because I think I talked about this in a previous podcast about the green hydrogen. They said like because they're going to develop this entire green hydrogen industry in the Magallanes region, and they were like, this is just too much. Like, there are going to be too many people, too much industry. Like, mm-hmm. we're not prepared for that. There's going to be, like, an eternal traffic jam. So we need more infrastructure. We need more hospitals. We need more schools because there's going to be more people.
Exactly as I was saying, they're focusing on a lot of public infrastructure first before they're going to be trying to develop. A lot of what I'm talking about here, we've broken down in other episodes.
Yeah.
So you can go check those out. So, talking about the digitization, and of this, and in this area, it's funding for a pre-investment studies of this thing called the Humboldt Cable, which is a fiber optic project connecting Chile and Australia, which I thought was a myth. Like, I thought this actually wouldn't. Like, I thought this was something Piñera was trying to do not work, but apparently. It says pre-investment studies.
Yeah.
So maybe it isn't a thing. But
I mean that's how internet works. I mean, you have aquatic cables.
Right, but not for that far from Chile to Australia, because usually it's done in Europe where, again, like if you're doing subaquatic things in Europe, that makes sense. Not that far from country to country, from island to mainland, right?
Yeah, but you also got to connect the continents, right?
Yeah, but you don't, like, I know it, but I think that length is what I'm trying to say. That cable from Chile to Australia, you're going to lose so much energy. I don't know. I'm not a cablist.
With all the cables that they've stolen last week in the Biobío region, like, they might as well connect Chile with Australia. Have you heard about that? They stole, like, 7 kilometers of cable. It was crazy.
But it's not the cable. It's the fact that that's one of the big problems Chile has is the length of your cable. The longer the cable is, the more energy and connectivity you lose.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so they're developing a roadmap for this type of implementation. And they're working with places like the Ministry of Science, Technology, Knowledge in this type of innovation. And also trying to figure out how to work in artificial intelligence with help of... All of this is being helped with both, again, as I said, the public and private sectors. With financing totaling more than $1.4 billion for this year. So, that's it.
That's nice.
That's it. So I tried to make that as interesting as possible. It can be a little dry, but I think it's really important that these things are going to be...
I, for one, am on the edge of my seat.
Well, there you go. You're edging.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's what I got. That's what I got.
So right now the diplomatic relations between Chile and Venezuela seem to be at a new all-time low. Well, maybe not all-time low, but they're not great. Recent time low. They're not great because what happened is that in February this year, there was a Venezuelan military officer who had defected and was living here in Chile with a refugee status. He was kidnapped from his apartment. He was kidnapped. Okay. And then security footage showed that there were certain individuals who claimed to be Chilean police escorted him out, but they were also masked in military attire. And
so Chilean police.
Yeah. But then not necessarily carabineros.
Right, right. So, like, what is it called?
PDI, maybe? Oh, no, COPE, I think, probably. Yeah. It was like the special forces. Anyway, they were not, it turned out. Because in late February, Mr. Ojeda's body was found buried in Maipú, in the district of Maipú.
In your poo.
In my... Oh, my God.
Classic joke, classic. Yep,
I know. But even in this context, never mind. So... They think that he more or less died around the night. What they think happened is like they kidnapped him from his house, killed him dead, buried him in my poo. Buried him in my poo. And that's that. And basically what they suspect is that Chilean authorities suspected that the perpetrators were from the notorious Tren de Aragua, which is like this criminal syndicate that has been operating in Chile for a couple of years now, I guess, of Venezuelan origin. Now, Venezuelan officials, they haven't really addressed the whole thing because Chile was just like, what the hell, you know, because, I mean, kidnapping a Venezuelan defected military officer, that sounds like a state operation, right?
Oh, from Chile's side.
No, that sounds more like from Venezuelan side.
Ah, yeah. Okay, so this was military as in like... Right-wing military.
Yeah, so they kind of... Okay. More like left-wing military, right?
Okay, so, well, anyway, political stuff I don't quite understand about Venezuela right now.
Exactly. So they thought that was... Well, Tren de Aragua, maybe that the Tren de Aragua was like in cahoots with the Venezuelan government and so on and so forth. So Venezuelan officials, of course, they were just like, oh, we don't have anything to do with that. And what is more is like the Venezuelan Ministry of Foreign Affairs, who was like, Tren de Aragua? What Tren de Aragua? That doesn't exist in Chile. And all the Chileans were like, are you for real right now?
Yeah.
Like, this has been going on for a while.
Yeah, they said that it doesn't exist.
Yeah. And everybody was like, dude, like, what are you even saying? Like, that this is fake news? So, like, this whole situation with first having Chilean sovereignty undermined by this supposed state act, this kidnapped. Or this kidnapping that was supposedly organized by the Venezuelan government, and then like these
could
comments
have been. Could have been.
Supposedly, that's what I'm saying, and then also like the Venezuelan politicians saying that hey, Tren de Aragua doesn't exist. Yeah, that has chilled relationships a little bit. And actually, Carolina Toja, our minister of the interior, she was just like, hey, look, we know who's behind these kidnaps. We have footage. And we know that they're in Venezuela, so please honor the extradition agreement that we have and send them back to Chile so we can investigate and they can stand trial.
Yeah, she was like, by, and also her and Borichbo said, by not recognizing the Tren Aragua, you are disrespecting everything that they've done, all of the victims of these crimes by not doing that. And it's deplorable and all that. They came out real strong against that. So yeah, it's been quite a week between Chile and Venezuela.
That, and then also the thing that they don't want to, they have like this whole spat about the extradition agreement because they want these people to stand trial. It's not a pretty thing. So it's still going on. They are currently evaluating diplomatic relationship with Venezuela. So let's see where this ends. It's rough, you know. It would be sad if it took a turn for the worse.
And you also have to remember how xenophobic Chileans have gotten towards Venezuelans. This is not helping the situation at all, which is really shitty because obviously the vast majority of the Venezuelan immigrants we have here are an incredible amount of help to the Chilean economy, to Chilean society. And so it just really sucks. It sucks that the government of Venezuela is making this worse.
Sucks. Oh, and apropos what you were saying, I don't know if you've seen that. I posted that the other day, that there was an article in the Financial Times, the Chilean version of the Financial Times, saying that actually foreigners contribute so much more to the economy relatively to...
We've always known this.
Yeah, but now we got numbers, you know? So, but I like that because it showed what we already knew.
We know what we've known forever. Let's just stop being xenophobic because it's like really tired song and dance, okay?
Okay, fine. Okay, we'll do it.
So some good news, which I love to do. So the Senate has passed the Electric Tariff Stabilization Project, that's a mouthful, into law, which includes subsidy for 1 million vulnerable households. I have a friend who's been working in this sector, and they've been trying to do this for years. Okay. I mean, trying to get the bill correctly written so that both sides will agree, going to meetings, like just going to the Senate, like so many different things. And I'm really happy for her and for all of these people it's affected. So what is the initiative? The aim is to reduce electricity bills for families in vulnerable communities, especially where there are coal-fired power generation plants in those areas. So it's because they're paying a shit ton more and the coal's right there, and there you go. So it's primarily small neighborhood businesses and families. So the Senate passed this unanimously, which is never happens. And it includes this, as I said, this reduction. So Energy Minister Diego Pardo said, "It was said that this project had no political viability, but ultimately dialogue prevailed and an agreement was reached. Today, for the first time in our country's history, we have a subsidy for the most vulnerable families. So this initiative provides this solution, because if this had not existed, those bills would have gone up 150% this year. And we've been hearing about this when we've talked about this, about how these companies are going to raise this electricity so much. So
I think it was because the electricity has been subsidized for the last couple of years anyway. It's not that they raised the prices. The prices have been...
Exactly. Yeah. So there have been subsidies, but the subsidy extension expired.
Right.
And so they had to sort of re-up the subsidy, or it was going to raise 150%. So it was really, like I said, I have a friend working in this, and it was really like a scramble, because if it's, that would be insane, right? If suddenly, so there's an example. For example, with the approval of this project, a mini market in San Bernardo would be avoiding seeing its current electricity bill doubled to $500,000, right? So maybe per their month, original bill was $310,000.
Is it per month? Are we talking per year? Or does it say?
It says a mini market, so it's probably per year. I don't know. But here, another case. Mm-hmm. In a household in Talcahuano, where several families share a single, homestead, I guess, under this law would pay a combined $120,000 instead of $200,000. So
sounds more like monthly, but okay.
Yeah, that would be monthly if it's a large. I just can't imagine a mini market paying. I guess it would be one of those bigger mini markets, not one of those like little bitty ones on the corner.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That would have to be
Almacenes, then it's just like, should pay not as much, and maybe I would imagine they pay like no more than 50 luca a month.
Yeah, because some of these mini markets, especially like not here in this in Las Condes, but kind of further out, are little bitty, and they just sell like eggs, bread,
right?
Essential oil.
Don de Juan.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good news, I think, for a lot of people who are imagine your budget having to increase that much a month. That would be insane. Especially when a lot of people make minimum wage or below, which is only $500,000 right now.
Yeah.
So this is the way this will work is the discount will be applied directly to the customer's bills. And if you don't know if this will affect you, you can find out on the government website. It specifically lists how your bills will be specifically subsidized for where you're living. So if you just Google the government subsidy for electricity, it will pop up a grid of where do you live, how much it will be subsidized, etc.
And it that depends on your income, as how do they discern who's going to get the subsidy or not? Do you know that?
That's on the grid, depending. So they're focusing on communities close to coal plants. So it's aimed at those places, for example, Mejillones, Tocapia, Huasco, Puchacanví, and Coronel. And so I think it sort of has like a territorial range, because these places are already poor and they're all working in the electricity sector. But again, check that grid, because the grid has, here's where you live, here's how much you're going to get subsidized, etc.
Check that grid. Watch the space.
Mm-hmm. So, another group is creating to assess other sources of financing to increase the annual subsidy for vulnerable families, to analyze other policies to reduce the increase in electricity tariffs for regulated customers. Quote, This bill is fair, responsible, and sustainable. On behalf of the government, I thank the understanding and contributions of the parliamentarians for allowing the work of this project. This is proof that beyond legitimate political differences, we can work together in Chile. That's Pardo saying that.
Nice.
Yeah, it's very good news for a lot of vulnerable families.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Okay. So as all y'all know, there is currently a census going on right now in Chile. Mm-hmm. You might or might not know that. That is the, well, first census since 2017. Incensed. Nice. Mm-hmm. Let's put on some incense to, you know.
For the census people.
Yeah, just scare away the spirits, whatever. So the last census was in 2017. And unlike the last census and all the previous censuses, this one is not being carried out on one single day, but it's going to be carried out throughout half a year, actually. They're going to take 6 months because I guess they don't have the resources to do it in one day.
It also makes more sense because when... because when they did it in a whole day, if you weren't home, like for whatever reason, like you had to go and like you, if you didn't, you had to go to like a place and be like, I wasn't there in the sense, please don't make me pay a fine. And so it's sort of like, for example, I think they did my building over 2 days to try to catch everybody.
I think they also tried to be a little bit less disruptive because I think 2017 was actually they declared that a holiday. And
so everybody went out of town. Like, that's the thing. Is they were like, it's a holiday, so everybody went to the beach.
Exactly.
Because I remember that weekend, I was not at home. And also it affects
infrastructure and all these things. So, yeah. So the whole census that consists of like 40 questions and partaking in the census is obligatory. It's not like if you want to or don't want to. No, you have to.
Get a
and
fine.
If you don't, if you refuse to answer and if you give false testament or false information, you can be fined between 11,000 or 235,000 pesos.
Fine.
Yeah.
If you're an immigrant, you have a visa, you need to be censed.
Yeah, no, everybody who lives here, like, it doesn't even matter. Like, I think if you're a tourist, then maybe not. But even if you have a temporary visa.
Yeah. I just want to remind that a lot of, like, when I first got here, I was here for the census and I was on my first thing. And they're like, oh, no, you have to go home and you have to be censed.
Yeah.
And I was incensed by it.
Stop making this a thing.
I like it.
Fetch.
It's fetch. It's a
sensed
thing.
It's very sensed. So, like, if you say, like, no, I'm not going to do it, and then they charge you, slap you with a fine of, I don't know, 50,000 pesos, that doesn't mean you bought your way out of that. You still have to do it.
Yeah.
And if you still refuse, they're going to slap you with a fine again. That might be actually double the size. Can be up to, like, almost 500,000 pesos.
Just
so just do it. Just answer the questions.
It
so,
takes, like, 7 minutes, maybe.
So what happens if you're not home? So first, like, you can find out approximately when they come to your house. So you have to go to the website, which is called dondeestaelcenso.ine.gob.cl.
Let me just
repeat this. Dondeestaelcenso, all in one word, .ine.gob.cl. And then it's going to ask you for your district, where you live, Providencia, Nuño, whatever. You just put that in. And then it would show you a little map with the district basically framed in and little blotches that are like, you know, in blue. And it says, okay, in these highlighted areas, we're going to be from April 8th till April 21st or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if your place where you live is not inside these blotches, in these color highlighted areas, then you'd be like, okay, cool. Like, they're going to come for me. They're going to come for me. But after the 21st, for example. So if it's your turn, if they drop by your house and you're not there, don't matter. They're going to come back another day.
Yeah,
and if you're still not there, then they're going to shoot you.
No, then you probably have to go to one of those places and be like, please sense me.
Actually, you don't. They're going to leave a little letter, slip it under your door, with a little password, with a little code. And they're going to, please go to, I think it was like censo2024.cl, enter that code, and then please answer these questions online.
Why don't they just do that for everybody?
Huh?
Why don't they just do that for everybody? Well, I guess it's more secure, like, seeing you face-to-face.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess that makes more sense.
It sort of makes more sense
because... You haven't been censed yet?
No, not yet.
I have. I think it was really good representative of, like... I think the administration did a really good job. They have a lot of things about, like, gender identification and things like that. The only thing that was, like, what the if, was they asked who was in charge of the household. And I was like, what
is this, the 1950s?
What is that? And I was like, what does that mean? They're like, we want statistics about who does most of the work in the house. And I was like, well, me and my husband do about equal amount of work in the house.
Yeah. Get with the times, yo.
Yeah, which is not technically true because I do work from home and he doesn't.
So, yeah, anyway, so even if you do it online, again, it's obligatory. You have to do it. Do it. Just do it. So, happy census, everybody. Okay, got two more quick PSAs for all y'all before I hand it back over to Bethany. So, first thing is, remember that due to the rise of respiratory infections, as of March 15th, you're required to wear face masks again when entering an emergency care unit. It's not just medical centers, you're fine, but if you go into an emergency care unit, you have to wear a mask, and penalties can be pretty stiff, up to 3 years in prison.
Jesus.
And or 13 million pesos. I think this is just for the extreme cases, but I was surprised that it was that high.
Dude.
Just wear a mask.
People are dying. Side.
And there's another thing which I thought was really interesting, because there's a new government website, which in and of itself is not that exciting. However, that website is called jovenesprogramadores.cl. That is jovenesprogramadores.cl.
Nice.
And that one offers currently 31 online programming courses and other technology-related courses. And it's for free, and it has no age limit, and it covers topics such as web design, AI, cybersecurity, programming languages, video game development, and so on and so forth. So if that's your cup of tea, check it out.
That's jovenesprogramadores.cl.
It's for free, and I think it's a pretty good initiative, so check it out.
There's been a discovery of 50 new species off the coast of Chile recently. So, you know, I love dinosaur news and things like that. So this was really cool. A team of scientists, which was co-led by what's called the Barcelona Supercomputing Center, BSC, discovered 50 potentially new species in some unexpected areas, which is like underwater mountains off Chilean's coast, which is really cool.
Who would ever expect to discover new species underwater?
I know.
That never happens.
Right. We know nothing about the ocean. It's insane. So these results were released last Thursday, it coincided with the celebration of the United Nations Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development in the Spanish city of Barcelona, which is, again, tongue twister, and it brings together 1,500 experts from around the world to discuss aims for preserving oceans. And so the expedition was funded by what's called the Schmidt Ocean Institute, including a team of 25 scientists who sailed for 40 days through one of the planet's like most remote areas in the world. So the focus.
Facing sea shanties.
Nice. Nice.
No.
I don't know.
That would be awesome.
I like the fact that it was a tongue twister. That they sing
she shanties. Yeah, it was a tough thing to say.
Yeah. It focuses on more than 200 underwater mountains of the Sales y Gomez Ridge, which is 2,900 kilometers from the coast all the way to Easter Island, which is obviously also part of Chile.
I mean, it is, but...
In case people didn't know, it's technically part of Chile. So there's a documentation of corals, sponges, urchins, squids, fish, mollusks, and other species, which were never before observed. Those specific types of species were never observed by scientists. 160 species were detected in that area, and 50 could potentially be completely new, cataloged by scientists before. So researcher Ariadne Mitchell said it's a number that will probably increase as we work on the samples we have in the laboratory. So this underwater mountain range hosts one of the planet's most unique and biodiverse marine landscapes, which is really, really cool. Mitchell also pointed out, however, we need to better understand the biodiversity and connectivity of the region to know which species are there and which mountains, as well as potential changes in faunal communities. They're also attempting to provide climate modeling data through this research, and it provides a basis for informing the management of existing marine protected areas, especially for Easter Island. So they're trying to gain this necessary information to protect and catalog and discover these different species and protect them. The expedition took place from February 24th to April 4th with an international team, as I said, of scientists, but they were from Chile, United States, Italy, obviously Spain, and the Netherlands, including the first Rapa Nui marine biologist, Emilia Raa Palma Tuki, who recently graduated from the University Católica. There you go.
Nice. Fishies.
And fish, marine biolife and things. It's
yeah,
great.
It's not
love
quite
it.
Dinosaurs, but fish are just...
I mean, you know, fish are basically... Well, like sea urchins and stuff are like dinosaurs, yeah. Kind of. Anyway, yeah.
Broadly speaking, yeah.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with probably a deep dive into something interesting. If you got any ideas, let us know.
Yeah.
And do it. Check out our Patreon, and we hope to see you soon. So when in doubt...
Green go out.
Bye.
Bye.
The Chile Today podcast is hosted by Lennart Kluge and Bethany Francis and produced by Diego Pinguino Rivera. For more information on the news topics you heard today, check out chiletoday.cl.